You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Bob van Dijk. Now we're talking. Type Radio
FM. Now we're talking.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're in The Hague. It's, what is it today?
30th of May.
30th of May. We're at the underwear studios and our guest today is Bob van Dijk. Welcome.
Thanks.
First question.
Are you religious?
Religious? No, not really.
Why not?
It's a good question. I like certain parts of religion, but the fact that people sort of compare everything from books and go to one sort of direction, that frightens me a little bit about religion.
Do you feel you miss it? That it could have been a very important part in your work? And which?
Well, I went to when I was younger, I went to school, and every day, which was a religious school, and every day I came home with stories about the Bible, and then my father decided to take me out from the school to a normal school.
Because he didn't like the stories.
Well, he was a little bit frightening that I was constantly telling, hey, in the Bible this story and that story, which is of course nice, the stories as a story, but no, I'm not religious. I really like religion to look at it and to see it, but no, I don't need the feeling to be religious.
And do you have rituals?
Rituals, yeah, like going to bars and to discotheques and meeting people, and I really like meeting people, and when I'm at home for a long time I really feel that I have to meet people because I really like to talk.
But you consider that to be, you consider that to be a ritual?
For me it is a sort of ritual because it's constantly I'm saying to myself like, okay, it has been late, now I shouldn't do that the next day. And but yeah, I keep on doing that, and it's part of me that I want to do that sort of double life, designing and also being outside with people.
Is it also an addiction then?
In a way, it is an addiction, because if I look at the sort of friends that I have, they're not only designers, but yeah, all different sort of people, and I like really different sort of people. That always has interested me.
And do you think it's a social addiction almost?
Yeah, it is.
Which makes it not so bad, I suppose. I'm not sure. But anyway, do you think it plays a part in the way you work and your work ethics about your design work?
In a way, it does, because of course I want to move things into the direction that I think that design really fits to myself. On the other hand, I'm always interested in how other people, a client or whatever, thinks about certain things, and then if I can make some sort of fusion on that I like to hear the story behind projects or things. I'm always curious. Yeah.
And why did you become a designer in the first place?
Yeah, that's when I was younger. I had a friend of mine whose father was an artist, and my father was too, and we always said to each other like, oh, what our parents are doing, we're never gonna do that. Oh, and he's a painter now, and yeah, I started design for some sort of reason. Yeah, I was always making drawings, and I'm not sure if at the academy I really liked painting, but when I got a sort of stuck with myself, I really enjoyed also designing. Mm-hmm. And when I got stuck in design, it was constantly changing a motor for me. When one motor was a sort of overheated, I could easily let that motor stop and start the other motor. So that's yeah, sort of thin line in between what I'm doing constantly.
And then what do you think was the most important lesson that you've learned? What do you think is part as a designer?
What I see is that a lot of people are always so very serious about design. And in a way, I'm very serious in what I do. But on the other hand, if you take yourself very serious, or if people take themselves very serious, it's really difficult to have some fresh air in yourself. And in a way, I think design is not that important, which makes it a sort of more easier to deal with, because we're in a small part we are changing the world, of course. But if you compare it to scientists or to doctors, or what are we doing then? You know, and that sometimes really helps me to work on my ideas and whatever, to make it less serious.
But isn't it also a little bit of denial of your existence if you take yourself not so seriously, which makes it hard for people to do that in general?
Existence. Oh no, but wait a minute, I'm not saying that I'm taking myself not serious, because...
No, I mean also the work that you do, it's a very typical normal human reaction to say, what I do is really important.
Maybe you're misunderstanding me. I'm not saying that I'm not taking it serious what I do or whatever, but in the perspective of what's all happening, sometimes I go to a lecture and people are really talking about the profession, like, okay, this is the only way you should deal with design. But if you look at a light button, you can put it on or off. But in design, there are so many different ways and angles to look at it. And that's what really fascinates me, you know. Same with music. There's not one sort of music. There are different sort of music. And it's the same with the approach of design. There's not a general truth, to my opinion.
But is that also, I mean, in your work, for example, you have the ability of changing ways of looking, I find that quite fascinating. It's not always one way of doing, and over the years you go through very many directions. But how do you make that change? I'm curious.
I make that change by for some sort of reason. I'm a very social person, I believe, of course ask other people. On the other hand, I'm really interested in a lot of things around me, but sometimes I really like it to be really inside of my head. And recently I had a talk with Hans Wolbers from Lava, because I'm now design director recently at Lava. We spoke about the difference between him and me. And he's a sort of documentary maker, so he really takes ingredients and shows it. So it's a sort of aha erlebnis if you see it. I'm more a sort of fairy tale person. Okay, I also do investigation, but then I really like to make my own story or show my own direction on it.
Is that also the reason that you... I'm sort of putting it very black and white now, but you have a more Baroque way of designing. You don't like cut to the chase and really cut to the basics, but you sort of ornate a lot.
If you look at my work over the years, and I've been doing, of course, a lot of cultural projects, and I've done a lot of also corporate projects. Sometimes it's not Baroque at all, but very almost Swiss. Mm. And on the other side, I also like Baroque, because I think that the reason why is it's the same with the less you have in your space, the more difficult it is to make it nice. But on the other way, it's also that the more you add to it, at the end it can be one sort of mess, but then within the chaos to create still something interesting. I like stories within stories. So I go into a certain direction and then I get another idea that fits to it, and suddenly it's all layered with all different sort of stories. So I like people to look at my work and they see something, and by looking a little bit closer or further, they will see something else, and maybe something else, and then in a bigger perspective, something else. That's a little bit also like how I am. I'm constantly looking all different sort of directions, changing thoughts. That's a little
also
bit
also in ways of working, because in the course of your career, you've like worked alone, and then you went to Dunbar, then you went alone again, then you started NLXL, and now you're at it. What do you like more, working on your own, or is the change necessary for you to work?
Well, it of course, because we recently stopped with NOXL, together with Joost and Oscar, which was a studio for 8 years together, which was really nice working together, but on a certain moment, you also feel that for some sort of reason, the energy is a little bit out of it. And that just can happen. And we decided, we're very good friends. We started as friends. And of course, everybody wants to go into his own personal direction. And when you're working together, sometimes it can be difficult. You want to go into a certain direction, but maybe it's at that time not good for the company, or... Because you have three captains on the ship, and the fact that we in 8 years we never ever had real fights together is, I think, a sort of amazing. Yeah, but
so you're quitting just before you start to have fights, maybe?
Well, we spoke about it. And first, because I started my career immediately from the academy at Dunbar, which was an amazing place for me. And Gert Dunbar was really sort of inspirational person for me. I don't want to say so completely design-wise, but the way he looked at things, the way he dealt with the people in the studio, he really brought in a sort of a good atmosphere. He took the people serious. It was a fantastic place, so almost a second school after the academy. But after 7 years working there, I had the feeling that I already did everything possible in a studio, so I could have continued over there. But for me, I wanted to go into another sort of direction. And of course, running a studio or feeling the sweat in your hands of getting a project yourself, because everything always came to my, I had a room upstairs and there was a new project and a new project came. And then suddenly you start for yourself and then you're checking constantly the phone, like, is the electricity cable not working? Or because, yeah, the telephone works, yeah, but nobody is phoning. And then you have to realize, like, hey, being a designer, having work, means that you have to go outside, meeting people. And that was, for me, a very nice and new experience. So I had for, I think, about 2 years my own studio, working alone, but I was traveling a lot because I did a lot of freelance work for some advertising agencies also. And sometimes I was in London, and that was really nice. And yeah, that was, for me, a new experience. And then on a certain moment, I felt like, yeah, I'm all alone and constantly troubleshooter somewhere, do a project. Then I thought, like, yeah, I miss a little bit the community or to share your work with other people. Like, hey, what do you think about it? And then I always had the plan with Joost Rozenkrantz, who also worked at Dunbar, to start another studio. And also with Oscar Smulders, who did interaction design. So we spoke about it, and yeah, within a couple of weeks, there was NOXL. And together with Bas ook, and with Lonnek, we started with 5 people, NOXL. And yeah, later on, you will always find out that, yeah, 5 captains on a ship is even more difficult than 2 or 3. And yeah, people decided to leave and do something else. And yeah, now I'm doing something completely different, like, because I became a design director now. In the first place, it all happened to me, because in the beginning I thought, like, okay, I'm gonna start my own studio again alone, and I'm drawing again a lot, and I like painting again. I get a lot of inspiration from my son, who is 6 years old. He's making drawings, and sometimes, yeah, if you ask a person to draw a car, for instance, if you ask it to a child, a child just makes a car. But if you ask it to an adult, they immediately think, like, should it be a Mercedes, a BMW? And my child really gave me the inspiration together to start drawing again. We are making drawings together. And what I want to do now is also involve my father into drawing. So we make really big drawings, and then it will be 3 generations of Van Dyck making a painting or a drawing, and that really fascinates me. But that's typically me. Eh? Now I'm going completely away from.
Does your son comment on the work you do? Does he tell you what he likes or not likes about your work?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, he always thinks that I'm drawing funny things, and then he redraws me sometimes, or he comes up with other things. And it's really, I believe it's the same with an audience. Hey? You can have a room, you put a person in there, and you put a chair in another person, and on a certain moment, all those people start to communicate with each other, and then something happens. And I feel the same with the drawings, that I draw a character, a tree or whatever, and at the end it's something, and they all seem to communicate with each other. And I do that together with Zonne, and sometimes I do it alone, and I think about things, and then suddenly a story appears, and it's a sort of ongoing process.
Is it, you mentioned that now you're at the design creative director at LAVA.
LAVA, yeah.
Yeah, is it strange to work in somebody else's studio after having your own studio for 80 years?
Well, the fun was that I actually, because I'm a member of AGI, and the Alliance Graphique Internationale, and Hans Wolbers also, and 2 years ago we organized the Congress in Amsterdam, Unknown Land, and we got along very well together. And I thought like, hey, I want to phone Hans because I want to know how do you finish your studio? Because starting a studio is very easy, but to end it. So that was my idea, to phone him. And he said like, oh, Bob, are you stopping? Maybe we should have some dinner next week. Is that okay? I said, wow, that's nice. And we spoke with each other and it was really a nice talk together. And then after 10 minutes or so, he said like, maybe it's a strange question, but why don't you come join us? And I said like, yeah, but I'm not sure if I want that. And for me, it's also difficult to see you as an employee or what, but let's see it as an experiment. And then I felt like, yeah, why not? It's Amsterdam, it's another city, because I've been working a lot in The Hague and of course doing freelance work in other cities.
Are the clients different, working for LAVA and then for NLXL?
In a way they are, but that has to do a little bit with the background of NLXL and also the background with LAVA, because what I see is that they're very strong in editorial design, like making books and magazines, and there's a very strong idea behind making those magazines and helping the client also to come up with good ideas for a magazine, not only designing it. And I think that the people, also Paul Hughes, who is the strategy director at, what a strange word, a strategy director, managing director, whatever. But he does a lot of the strategy, and it's a studio. What I really like is that they really think a lot, and making strategy. A lot of designers, they from the Department of Marketing or Communication, they get a plan, and then you kind of visualize that and make something nice out of it. At LAVA, I see that we are so close to the problem a client has that we speak with them in brainstorms, and then at the end, the product, if it's a website, a movie, a book, a theater play, a music thing, whatever, we are very close to the beginning, and that's what really interests me a lot. That's a little bit the difference, yeah.
Is there a difference in attitude between Amsterdam and The Hague in terms of design?
Amsterdam goes a sort of a lot faster, to my opinion. Everything is... But there's so much... In the beginning I always said like, oh yeah, Amsterdam is so modern, and there's so many things going on, and I like to stay in The Hague because I really love The Hague, and which still is. On the other hand, now, because I've also been working for Wieden & Kennedy, we're doing some freelance projects, but that was of course a short amount of time, I really see that there's a lot of energy, there's more sort of international connection, that's what you really feel. Mm-hmm. If I come to the train station, if I arrive in Amsterdam, you immediately feel this is an international city. And that's what I feel like doing projects, meeting people in Amsterdam, it has a sort of more international feeling.
So would you move there?
At the moment not, because I have my house in The Hague. I love the beach. I also love the mentality in The Hague. I know a lot of people in The Hague, mm-hmm. because I also like DJing as a hobby, and I know a lot of people that own clubs, bars, cafes, and But switching, like sometimes going to Amsterdam and going to The Hague, that's fine with me, but you never know for the future, of course. But my child goes to school in The Hague, and I take care of him for 3 days in a week. And I want to keep on doing that. Yeah.
You're quite known for being a collector. When did it start? When did you start collecting things?
And why?
It's in the genes. It started with my father. My father has always been a collector of African art, He was interested in biology. He had over 60,000 pinned beetles in his house. So everywhere there were cupboards full with, how do you call that? To open it.
Drawers.
Drawers completely full with little beetles. And I can remember when I was in the academy, I moved to another house and I asked my father, hey, I moved to another house. My father immediately went to the garden with a stick against a tree to see what sort of beetle or animal would be over there. My house was, the house of my parents were completely full with everything. My father collected everything.
And what was your father's profession?
My father went to the academy in The Hague and he became a teacher on the academy. But he also was a teacher at that time it was called the TH, but now it's called TU, the Technical University in Delft. And he was a teacher for for architects and for normal drawing and how do you call that? Airplane drawing and industrial designing. And I often went with my father when it was holiday. I went with him because where to put Bob? Let's take him with me. And I was drawing over there. And they had those huge cellars downstairs with Spanish war suits, even airplanes, whatever. I could really play over there, and I got really fascinated by all those sort of things. So it was really my father. When I was young, I also collected stones and fossils and shells.
Would that be like the first collection you have, stones?
Yeah, it started by while going on holiday and there were in France, and there was a little river, and on the other side of the river there was a sort of stone, and my father said, you should have a look over there because there might be fossils. From that moment, we were staying for 2 weeks on the camping. Every morning I woke up at 7, took some bread with me and a hammer, and was the whole day tick, 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 tick.
Do you still have that collection?
I still have it. Yeah, and I can remember coming with the car back from France, and the back wheels were really low, not because of the wine my father took with him, but all the stones and fossils. And one day I was really screaming out loud, Papa, Mama, we are rich, we are rich. Because I thought I found gold, but it was pyrite. I don't know the English word. Yeah. But
I just saw a documentary this last week. They call it Fool's Gold. It's sort of a nickname.
Yeah, Fool's Gold. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, what other collections do you have?
Let me see. I have artificial limbs. It was even my final exam.
Why do you start an artificial limb collection?
That's a nice story because I liked collecting, so I always went to secondhand shops. And there was a secondhand shop, and there was the object where you hang your coat on. What's the name of it?
A coat hanger.
A coat hanger, exactly. And I came in, and there was a hat hanging, and there was a shawl, and there was a coat, but also there was an arm hanging. And I looked at it and I wanted to buy it completely. I thought, like, this is a fantastic object. Like somebody came in and just took his arm off. And so that was the start of starting that collection. So I bought it. And then suddenly, because you never see those sort of objects, and suddenly you see them everywhere sometimes. So I was really concentrated on it. And yeah, on the secondhand market over there, I bought another one. And yeah, on a certain moment, I had 30 artificial limbs.
And isn't it also the case that because people know that you are collecting those things, and when they run into stuff themselves, they'll just buy it for you and give it to you?
Sometimes they do.
So your collection is extended because of other people, while yourself might not be that interested anymore. Does that happen?
The funny thing is that I know at the moment I'm in a complete new sort of period that I'm not collecting anymore. I don't know why. Maybe because it's a strange period for me. Yeah? Like, stopping a studio, having a new experience, really try to find out yourself again. Because I had the idea like, okay, I'm not going to design for a while, and I want to concentrate on drawing and on painting. And it's a complete strange time for me. But on the other hand, I like it.
But will you get rid of some of your collections then?
Well, the problem is while stopping NOXL so much, shit came to my house. And of course, Joost Rozenkrantz was sort of easy, like, okay, I don't need anything and that's fine. But I thought like, oh yeah, but I can use this, I can use that. This is something I can give to that person. So it's all at my house, but yeah, the top floor is a sort of, I can't walk over there, you know, because yeah, what more do I collect? Tin toys, round objects. I really like the things that are round. So I collect everything which is round. I collect them and I put them all together, and then suddenly that becomes also a collection. Tin toys, old computer games. I'm not playing them, but I like sometimes the illustration or the simplicity, yeah, like the Atari games and old keys.
Globes, yeah. No?
Do you globes, I also had globes, keys, old children books, illustration books, atlases. So much more.
Is there one collection that you could never ever go without? I mean,
yeah, I think it's of course my fossil and stone collection, because that already starts from so young. Hey, and I found it with my parents. People gave me stones while going on holiday. It fascinates me that I know so much about stones that still I see new sort of stones, and that really fascinates me. That and fossils, and I'm so happy that that Zonne, my child, because I never wanted to influence him on whatever, but he's so interested in the animal world, also in stones, in fossils. He started drawing himself. It was not me giving him a pencil in his hand with threads around it that he had to draw or whatever. It just all came by itself. But at the moment, I'm a sort of... the funny thing is that my girlfriend at the moment, her house is completely empty, and it's getting more and more objects in there. And my house is sort of getting completely the opposite, like from a huge secondhand store into more sort of with less things. But it's constantly a period for me, because when it's gone, I want to have it back. And when I have it back, I want it to be gone. So that's a constantly...
Do you ever consider to open a museum, to have a museum for your collections?
I'm not sure if it would be interesting for people. Because the value for me is not the fact that certain things have a certain value in money, but they have another sort of value for me. Just the fact that I like to compare things, and maybe as a designer, I'm not sure if that's right, but because your profession is looking at things, and what I find out by constantly training myself by collecting is that I can really see differences between circles or so. Mm. And that's, for me, that's fascinating to really look into details.
You mentioned Gert Dunbar. Who would you consider to be your heroes?
My heroes?
Yeah, in design.
My heroes in design, pooh. I always had a problem with that. Like, I don't have so much sort of heroes that I think like, okay, I was constantly thinking about them, but when I was at the Academy, I really liked Studio Dunbar for their work, because it was so much, I could feel the pleasure in it. I really liked Una Design, which was based in Amsterdam, and you could really feel also their pleasure in, at that time they made diaries with, there was one that had a little hole in it, and a knicker, they put a little round ball in.
Marble
in, yeah. It. And it was so nice, extra energy that they put on investigation. And that was really a nice studio. And of course, Grapus in France. That was really also, I really enjoyed the free way of drawing things, but also with a really... clever political message. And then I was at the Academy and I graduated, and I could immediately start at Studio Dunbar, which was for me a sort of like, okay, if I ever end up somewhere there, then I didn't do it bad, but I started there. So that's, and it was a really good team, nice people, and it was a sort of family, but also very serious. People were working very serious. But we had a lot of fun together. It was an amazing I've met so many nice people, also from abroad. And Gert Dummer could really inspire the people by not saying, hey, you have to do it like this or you have to do it like that, but constantly shooting holes in it and giving you energy to feel comfortable. So that I think I was there in a very, very good period. And of course, I'm mentioning Gert Dummer now, but of course, Michel de Boer, Kitty de Jong, the whole team of designers over there. It was sometimes it was a sort of play yard, yeah, but on the other hand, serious, but yeah, it was really good time there.
How would you like to be remembered?
How would I like to be remembered? Like the lion with the long hair and...
No, yeah. No.
That's also quite nice.
No, well, what I hope, because sometimes people understand what I'm doing and sometimes people absolutely don't understand what I'm doing in design. They say like, hey, your design should be a little bit less complicated for certain reasons. And but then I think like, hey, this is my way of looking at things. And there will be a moment that maybe I will do it in another way. But I hope that, because that's what I want to do with my design, is that people see constantly other worlds in what I do, and that they also realize that it's not only a sort of form thing, because that's what people mostly or sometimes think, but there's a lot of more behind it. And how would I be remembered? Like a designer that really had pleasure in what he does, and something like that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.